cliffcentral.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Belighted with Rami and Romeo on a beautiful, beautiful day. And of course, as you know, I never fly solo because my Romeo is always behind me trying to drag my dress and pull me back. And every time I'm still talking.
You tell me I was sleeping.
And you were sleeping. You are trying to sleep on the job. That is not funny.
This is sabotage.
So I get to work and my Romza has parked already. I park right next to him and I can see that this dude is not moving. For a second I was thinking, what are the possibilities that he could be dead?
But then come on.
I knew that he wouldn't like drive here and then come and die in the car.
It's called a power nap.
Well, that power nap was really powerful because I kept on saying, Romeo, Romeo. And he couldn't hear me until I started shaking him.
I set up my watch to wake me up at 3.
Yeah.
Because I needed that power nap.
But then the show starts at 3. How do you like wake up at 3? That doesn't work.
No, but I knew you were going to get me before 3 o'clock. Oh. And that's exactly what you did. Deny it.
Unbelievable. No.
Deny it.
I didn't have a choice. I had to. Fine. Okay. Maromza, how are you? Besides trying to take a power nap on the job.
I'm good. I'm awesome. I'm feeling good.
Did you have a good week?
Yeah, I had a good week. Yeah, actually I did.
Fantastic.
And I think because of the... You know, a lot of people winding down.
Yeah.
There's no traffic. You know, the office is nice and chilled. And, you know, my email shocks me. I don't get, you know, because people are all generally, you know.
Unfortunately, where I live, we don't know what that means. There's always traffic in four ways. It doesn't matter, Monday to Sunday, there's always traffic.
Yeah.
You'll think I'm going to get that 10 minutes later, that 10 minutes early. Hmm. That 10 minutes is basically the grace period to just make it like just on time.
But I think also from a infrastructure development perspective, I mean, obviously the government needs to start looking at additional exit and entry. Entry points into four ways because it's just 24-hour madness there.
Yeah, it is complete 24-hour madness. But anyway, enough about traffic, enough about trying to talk about getting here on time, and enough about your power nap. I hope you're not going to be sleeping throughout this show.
Like I'm good.
Because we've got a jam-packed show, something that is absolutely powerful. We need it. It is going to be a mega blaster of a show. This is how we're going to wind it down. Mm. And in studio with us today... Before we do that, yes, you can tell everyone how to get hold of us, my Romza.
Ah, thank you. That's very important. That's very important. Am I that predictable?
Yes.
All right. So you do want to interact with the show. On Instagram and Twitter, we are Belighted Show. Facebook, it's Belighted with Rami and Romeo. WeChat, Cliff Central. And on Skype, you can actually do call us if you are feeling brave on Cliff Central Studio. And do get in touch because we love to hear from you. And you were saying we got a question or two.
Yes, we're doing already. But then before we get to the questions, let's introduce our guest. We have Tracy Einstein in studio. Mm. Tracy, she's the... Feinstein. Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Fine. She's looking fine.
She's looking fine. Yeah, I don't know. Feinstein. But then Einstein also because of, you know, the...
Wisdom.
The wisdom
that goes with it. Welcome, Tracy.
Yeah.
Welcome to our show. Welcome to Belighted. We are glad that you could join us and, you know, you just took time out of your busy schedule to just come and grace us with your presence. We are completely and totally honored and we are humbled by your presence here. Tracy is the operations manager for the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, and that's what we are talking about today. If you see, if you saw my Facebook post or the our page on Belighted, I said because you know during the silly season, the festive season, I think our feelings. They get extra sensitive. That's when people feel most sensitive, most vulnerable, and they start looking back at the year. You know, when you realize that the year is almost over, what have I achieved? What have I lost? What did I fail in? And all those kind of things, they can actually make one catch feelings. And you find that people are really, really depressed. And there's so many reasons why people get depressed over the holiday season, because some of them, they don't have family. Some of them, family lives very far. You know, some of them, the family had like a bit of conflict. They fought. They're no longer friends. They don't love each other anymore. And some of us who have people that we are not angry with. We just cannot, like, oh, we know Uncle so-and-so is going to be there. He's going to get drunk and he's going to start getting rowdy. And other people, they don't look forward to that. So I spoke to Maromza last week and we were talking about this whole thing, how people get suicidal. You know, there was an article of a mother who fell out of, who jumped out of a window with her 5-year-old child.
I think that was a very traumatic experience.
That was a very traumatic experience.
You know, it not only does it make the news very quickly, but the people who were at the vicinity at the time,
they
that saw it live.
They started taking pictures and they saw it live as well.
And you see how quickly it hit social media.
Yeah, it was all over social media. And then I remember when we started talking about it, and I was like, you know, we actually need to do a show about this so that people can just, so we can make people aware what happens during a festive season. Because someone who is out of touch, they just think that people are just being spoiled. But for others, the festive season is like the pinnacle. It is like the most important time of measuring yourself and your achievements and how far you've come and how much you've done. And for someone who's hopeless, it can be a very sad situation.
But I think also we need to bring the balance between some people are happy, you know, and different people going in different directions. People are going home, people are going on holiday.
Yeah.
But there is that person who's actually going through their worst depression right now. You know,
yeah.
Come 1st December, that person is completely out of their wits and, you know, they have no clue how they're actually going to go through this season. But I think also, you know, having our guest in studio,
yeah,
it's for us to really break it down. And thanks for that nice summarized version of
yes.
What today's show is all about.
Yeah, but then
so
we're going
it's
to
really,
give it to Tracy.
It's really about how do you cope with depression over Christmas, because depression doesn't necessarily have to be lack of money. It could be being overwhelmed by all the parties and, you know, having to host the family, and by the time December ends, you are completely out. So with that said, you know, we would like to then engage more in the conversation to really, you know, break down this and to help people deal better or cope better.
Mm.
Yes, Tracy.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us on your show. You know, it's thanks to the partnership of SADAG and the media,
yeah,
where we get great support from the media. And our continual strive, our mission, our struggle to educate people around mental illness, in particular depression,
mm-hmm,
there's a need for it. We've got to educate, we've got to create awareness, we've got to allow people to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we pick up the topic of depression, in particular over the holiday season, depression is one of the elements or a particular mental illness that you often find is part of the other mental illnesses. So where people have been diagnosed with more chronic illnesses like schizophrenia, like bipolar, even the anxiety disorders, depression is one of those things that certainly plays a common role amongst all of them. And then we've got the things that trigger the depression. And I think that's what we're here to talk about
yes.
today. Not from a medical point of view. How do we live with it? How do we survive with it? What can we do to help one another during this time? And, you know, the common things that come up for why people seem to battle with depression, why people are diagnosed with depression, are the common things of relationship issues,
yeah,
financial problems, non-performance, and I relate that to either academics, school. Okay, this is the time of the year where kids should be getting results or have already got results, or it's work performance. And when those three elements, like you said earlier, it's the end of the year, it's your peak, your pinnacle of where you want to say, okay, I have achieved my goals or I've done really well. This is when we sort of like go, okay, well, not everything has been turned out the way that it should have turned out. And people then become overwhelmed with this feeling of, I'm not okay. And I think what is really important on the right up front is let's put on the table what are some of the signs that we should look at when we are engaging with either work colleagues, because people are still working,
yeah,
like us, or friends or family members. So some of the things to be aware of that a person could be experiencing depression. And up front, I want to say it's not always just the person who cries. That's not it. And in fact, it's probably more that they're not in touch with their feelings, and therefore the crying is not happening.
I think let's take it from the top, because you are already kind of like going through, you know, the nuances of the various effects of that. You know, Rami just said that, you know, SADC, you know, the Depression Anxiety Support Group. Let's talk a little bit about that. When was it established? And I think what is the mandate, you know, for SADC, so that people know and understand. And then from there, we can kind of like, you know,
break it down
properly.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, SADC stands for South African Depression Anxiety Group. It is an NGO based in the Johannesburg, Sandton area. And it was started nearly 23 years ago by our founder, Zane Wilson. And she herself suffered with anxiety and panic attacks. In those days, the diagnosis was not that easy. The organization has grown to what it has grown to today, whereby we run a call center, which runs 7 days a week, 24 hours, 365 days of the year. So we will be open on Christmas Day and New Year. And the call center is manned by volunteers. A lot of them are lay counselors. And we are then able to assist the callers who phone in. Now, people can phone in to us.
What is that number in case someone is depressed right now as we speak?
Right.
It's 0800.
There you go.
567. 567.
And obviously, people can call from 8 to 8, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Correct. They can. We do also have a 24-hour line. So even after 8 o'clock, we do have counselors on duty to take calls through the night. So they and if they phone that number, they are diverted to the next contact number.
Okay. Before I hand you over to Rami, because I know she always have this awesome questions. Part of doing business, you always have, you know, like your peak statistics in terms of the biggest calls that you receive. So, you know, if I hope, hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot, but what is the main, the biggest reasons that you find that people are calling?
Okay. SADC can take up to 400 calls a day. Okay. And through that shift from 8 in the morning to 8 at night, that's a significant amount of calls.
It is, yeah.
We are an organization focusing on mental health. So the calls are normally pertaining to depression, anxiety, bipolar, any of the anxiety disorders, any of the mood or personality disorders, also to suicide. So it's all around mental illness, and the calls range through a vast spectrum, because part of our advocacy and our responsibility in through educating and create awareness is to actually break down the stigma pertaining to mental illness. And I think it's a big thing. And it is a challenge. There's three of us that are sitting here in this room today. And for argument's sake, we could all three be diagnosed with depression. But the reason for our depression will be different. And as unique individuals, our behavior could well be different. So, for example, myself, I might cry a lot. I look at you, Rami, and I go, oh my gosh, well, you are just quiet and you don't have a smile and you just withdraw. And then you say, yes, well, I'm suffering from depression. And then I go, but me, I'm Tracy and I'm also suffering with depression and I cry. So how can you?
Yeah.
And straight away, this whole type of difference in behavior plays out and it contributes to the stigma. And this is why also people are scared. They don't know how do I approach a doctor? You know, if we're all coughing, you know, I'm coming down with the flu, I'm getting bronchitis. I go to the doctor and it doesn't matter where you are, they probably all prescribe the same medication.
Yes.
So this is the challenge that we face. So the more that we can educate, the more that we can create the awareness and talk about depression as a real illness. Nowadays, the statistics in South Africa are that 1 in 3 will be or is suffering from a mental illness.
Mm. Yeah, like one way or the other.
So in this room, one of us is. So
it has to be Romeo.
It has to be Romeo.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There you go.
All right. So
Tracy.
Please.
You know what I wanted to ask you? In terms of depression, because most of it is behavior, like you were saying, someone might be crying and someone is more withdrawn, and other people are just like more kept to themselves, and they're just different ways and different behaviors. Now, when I'm in my house with the people that I live in, what is it that I look for? Because, you know, sometimes, today she's just so sad. Mm. Like, how do you separate sadness from depression? Lashing out or throwing a tantrum? That someone will say, she's just like that. She always likes throwing tantrums. And you actually think, but what we don't know is that it might not be a tantrum. It might be something, a way of crying
expressing
out for
yourself.
Help. And expressing yourself. Mm. So someone who's probably listening, wondering, but then how do we know? How can we tell? Is there a certain... What is it? What shows?
So it is a good question, and it's good for people to understand. So depression is a lot more and over a longer period of time than just the Monday blues.
Yeah.
Or I'm having a bad day, I'm tired, and I just don't like the look of the world. Because we all have those days. That is real. The diagnosis for depression is a clinical diagnosis, okay? So by that I mean you can't just go and have a blood test and think, okay, well, it's going to happen. And so this significant feeling, and the best way for me to describe it is feelings of hopelessness, of feelings of helpless, feelings of so dark that you're really down, okay? And this plays out over a period of 2 weeks or longer. So it's more than just, like we say, Blue Monday or a couple of days, or I'm having a bad day in the office and I don't like the people there, but I go there. People suffering from depression who have been diagnosed with depression and are really waiting for their medication to kick in and therapy to start working, they actually battle to open the curtains. By 11, 12 o'clock, they're still in their pajamas, okay? They're not able to get up and brush their teeth and get dressed. And for people who have not experienced that level of depression, I think that is where we start to say, well, I'm having a bad time, okay? And so maybe I am depressed. On that, I'd also like to say, you know, we do have situations which affect us in life. For example, the loss of a loved one.
Yeah.
Okay. And the stages of grieving are very normal. So it is normal to feel sad for a period of time.
Okay.
After that is played out over perhaps months and months and years, to the stage that it has affected your ability to run a day-to-day routine of normality, then you could be suffering with clinical or even depression.
And what about someone who doesn't sleep? Like, I know people like those, they would rather sleep the whole day and not wake up, like you say. Mm. And then when everyone else goes to sleep, that's when they actually wake up. Is that like, I know sometimes you think it's insomnia, but doesn't that, to a certain extent, brush towards being depressed as well?
Very much. Very much. And the two go hand in hand. In that, you know, the sun and the moon and the day and the night are there for a particular reason. And we do need to have a certain amount of quality sleep. I think they mention, you know, going into that REM state where you really do go into that deep sleep state. Now, if you are not experiencing that because of stress or the trauma that you've experienced or unhappiness or financial restraints, whatever it might be, it starts affecting your whole body, which... our body and our head are not separated. They're joined together. And therefore, yes, it does move over to affect depression. So when we talk about, again, some of the signs of depression is the changes in sleeping patterns and the changes in eating patterns. And again, some sleep too much and some sleep too little. Yeah. But yes, that quality rest certainly has a huge effect on depression.
And also... because generally, for example, December is a quite a very, very too many activities going on. People, you know, excited with the assumption that everybody's happy. You know, families tend to come together in one house and stay together. What are those signs that, you know, as a family, you need, even though you're having fun, but be on the lookout to make sure that you pick up those things? That's what I'm saying. The general assumption is that everybody's happy, we're happy to see each other, but someone might be going through depression, and we kind of like want to empower, you know, families or people to be able to look out for those signs.
Very much. You know, this time of the year, getting together with family is also not always a happy one. But to be aware of a couple of the signs is the typical one of the person withdrawing. So not wanting to take part in the conversation, not wanting to take part in the group, maybe games that are being played on Christmas Day or this, you know, this time of the year. Very especially, I would like to highlight the things of perhaps youngsters and children.
In fact, that's where I was going, yeah.
Okay. I am a mother of young adolescents, and I've lived through the teenage years. So when my boys go to their room and they close the door and they switch on the music, you tend to think, oh, you know what? They're just normal teenagers. They like to be by themselves. They want to have their music blaring. And parents tend to pass in the passage and say, how was your day? Are you okay? And everyone just goes, yes, or they stick thumbs up. But have you actually made that time to connect? And I think it's a case of parents and extended family members saying, let's involve everybody. And it's okay to put in sort of rules or boundaries. So on whatever, I mean, Friday, we've got a public holiday coming up, which is very often like a friendly family day, perhaps, you know, maybe the family's going out for a picnic. Say to everyone, we are all going. And if somebody says to you, or the family says, no, no, I'd rather stay at home by myself, I'm happy in my bedroom, I'm going to watch TV, don't just say, well, no, you have to come,
okay,
or suit yourself, all right? Use that as an opportunity to say, we'd really like to have you. What really is going on? Why don't you want to come and join us? Okay. And I think this is so often the most simple and basic message pertaining to understanding depression is don't leave that person isolated. Reach out, extend a hand, say to the person that you're concerned about, because we do. We all pick up these six senses, all these behavior changes. So take time, slow down, reach out and say, you know what, even if you don't want to speak to me, whether it's the mother or the father or a friend or a granny, how about here's a phone number, here's SADAG's number. Phone and speak to a counselor because I'm concerned about you. I think it's rude, especially what we're talking about today. People might go, oh, I know somebody like that. I'm going to go and tell them they're depressed. They better go and see somebody.
Yeah.
That also doesn't help the matter.
That doesn't help at all.
You know, so do it in a caring way.
Yeah.
But I assure the person that you're going to be with them. You're going to travel the road with them. You're going to help them if they've got to go for treatment. And one of, you know, SADAG's philosophy is, in terms of the counseling that we give is that we will refer. So if the referral is that the person needs to go and get medication, maybe even go to hospital, then let that family member, friend, business colleague, whatever, go with them. Care for them, because it's quite daunting. You know, we're easy to accept, okay, I've got a cut, I'm going to the hospital, I'm going to get stitched up, and we think life's peachy after that. But depression is much more difficult.
True. Do kids get depressed? And at what age do you notice that a child is depressed?
I think there's a lot of research getting done out there. The youngest child in South Africa who committed suicide was at the age of 7. So without a doubt, that child was experiencing depression and anxiety and a deep sense of hopelessness at some stage for him to go ahead and commit suicide at that young age. I think parents, we underestimate the extreme amount of pressure that children are under. Mm-hmm. And as parents, we're also under a lot of pressure, and there's just not enough time. So I think the word is very much early diagnosis can save. It can help. Again, unique to each every person. And there's a genetic trend, or there's a genetic strength in why doesn't everybody get depressed? Or why does one person get more depressed and land up suffering clinical depression more than maybe somebody else? And when you are going through a diagnosis, the psychiatrist will look at your family tree. And this certainly does show a genetic tendency for more being more prone to the mental illness.
If you just joined us, we are speaking to Tracy Feinstein from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, support group. She's the operations manager there, and we're talking about depression and anxiety. And right now we're just talking about children who are depressed. But now, Trace, I want to take you back, sticking with the children, because it's not only just about being depressed, but also about the anxiety. There are a whole lot of factors that contribute to children being anxious and having panic attacks because of different elements. For instance, if a child has been involved in a car accident, for instance, and they haven't had any form of counseling or any form of support. So obviously getting into a car, and every time a car goes at a certain speed, they start getting frantic. Mm. And others, they don't even want to get inside a car, And others, it could be being within large crowds. I remember when I was young, I think when I was about 5-6 years old, when I was 4, I got stolen as a child. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just like
you're still
story.
Here.
Yeah, but I'm
this
still here.
You're back.
But I'm back. And I also, but now the next one that I wanted to tell is that I once got lost. We went to visit my aunt and my uncle, in another town around Rustenburg. But what happened was that because I was new in town, I was walking with my uncle. And for that few seconds, he let my hand go because he was speaking to one of his friends. And in that, I don't know what happened, but at the end of the day, I turned around, he wasn't there, or I wasn't there. Mm. And I was running around like crazy. Mm. And up to this day, I don't do big crowds. It's okay because I'm a performer. It's okay when people are watching me perform. Mm. But I wouldn't necessarily go and get mingly in that whole situation. Mm. Mm. But because, I would kind of get a bit of an anxiety attack. But now with kids, how do you help? Okay, now I'm too old to go back. I say, how do you help me? I want to go back. Maybe. But then with children, how do we help children deal with things like that? I mean, now we've got robberies, we've got hijacks, we've got a whole lot of things that are happening in and around our surroundings, Sometimes people can go and they can go rob a school. How do you teach young kids or someone if a classmate collapses at school and they die? I've actually had that experience as well in boarding school when I was 10 at that time. How do we help kids deal with that kind of depression? Because there's a misconception and a belief that this depression is only for older people who are dealing with financial strain and work issues. Now, with the kids, how do we help them?
Well, I think this is also, I just put it on the table right now, is that the mental illness affects all and everybody.
Yeah.
Young, old, fat, thin, rich, poor, pink, white, yellow, it affects all and everybody. And like I said to you, at some stage in your life or as in now, 1 in 3 are being affected by a mental illness. For children in particular, and I think it's a wonderful subject for you to pursue, perhaps even in the new year with some subject matter experts on it, and how to help children with the coping feelings. But when the examples that you've expressed, it is very normal, and our bodies are built with the fight or flight syndrome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for you to feel suddenly like scared when you lost your uncle's hand, and you go screaming and you run around and you're screaming. But that's how we're designed. So it attracts attention and somebody comes and saves you. And thank goodness, however many years you're still here.
The funny thing with me is that I didn't know anyone and they didn't know whose I was.
But you get attention.
Yeah.
So anxiety is that heightened feeling of fear. Okay, and again, it affects different people. Some have better coping mechanisms, either because of their upbringing or what they've learned or just their personal makeup. So what happens is that anxiety feeling, unless it is able to be contained, and when you're in a traumatic situation, like being lost, a hijacking, a robbery, all right, at this busy time of the year, again, children getting lost in the shopping malls, so when there's hundreds of people, okay, that heightened feeling anxiety often manifests. Your body then plays out as having a panic attack.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And that is where you think, oh, I'm going to die, but you will not, okay. It's important for family members or friends, loved ones, to contain the situation, talk, give a lot of care and support. And if there is a need, again, phone a place, SADAG, speak to a counselor. We can refer immediately for trauma counseling. We can refer to psychologists who are used to dealing with children in this kind of unique situation.
I've got two questions. So in terms of language, so how many language does SADAG support? So that, you know, people who can't speak, you know, other languages are able to express themselves in their own language.
Mm.
And secondly, is there a way for a parent to know, to be proactive about, you know, testing a child for depression? You know, so that you kind of like are proactive rather than just having to deal with the consequences.
Mm. Let me answer the easy factual question first. I think that, SADAG is a call center. We are able to assist all callers in their own choice of vernacular languages. It may not be immediate, but within the space of 4 hours with a shift changeover, we are able to assist people. Because we do recognize it's vitally important, especially when you're expressing your feelings and your emotions, to be able to talk in your own home language. So, yes, we do support all of the languages. Talking about early diagnosis of depression with children, I would like to say yes, speak to an expert. But again, because you're talking about feelings and emotions, and it's not a medical test, like I said earlier, depression is a clinical diagnosis. Mm. So if there haven't been any experiences to trigger or to bring on the onset of depression, you're not going to get it. Okay, and you can't take a blood test to be able to say, okay, you are prone to that. So again, part of the education, the also even the stigma, is be aware. You know what happened to my grandfather or my great grandfather. Now that person may have been diagnosed with, for example, bipolar. It doesn't mean that the child or the grandchildren will specifically get bipolar, but it could mean that they have a greater disposition to depression or anxiety. Okay. You know, that type of thing.
And just the last follow-up question from me, do you also provide workshops to teach people about the various aspects of dealing with, depression and anxiety? So, you know, like have a national, you know, workshops and seminars that you offer?
Okay. So one of the things that we get involved with a lot is corporate wellness days, where we are able to assist employee wellness programs. And then our other very big footprint where we're able to support people is through our support groups across the country. As much as we're based in Johannesburg, we have a network of nearly 200 support groups countrywide, and we cover every province. And especially with things like depression and anxiety, once the person has been diagnosed, once the person is having their therapy, having medication, that is is probably one of the strongest, the best, and the most helpful tools of moving forward and living with your illness, is sitting around a table once a week, once every 2 weeks, with like-minded individuals who are suffering the same thing that you are. Because that is when you really, when you look at somebody across the table and you look into their eyes and you can say, I understand because I've been there. Mm. But this is what I did to help myself. And then this other person goes, okay, I think I can do that as well. And that is how we really make a difference one by one on the ground, is through our network of support groups.
Wow. We're talking to Tracy Feinstein from SADAG, South African Depression and Anxiety Support Group. I want to ask you about your volunteers. Who can volunteer? I know you say you do have like the counselors there, but then your volunteers, how far and wide and what kind of volunteers do you have? And do you have people who just walk in and say, okay, I'm so-and-so, my name is Rami, and today I would like to spend the day with you and see, you know, and kind of help around because maybe I'm a good listener. I can bring some perspective. Yeah, tell us about the volunteers that work.
Yeah, thank you for that question, because the volunteers are very much the success of the organization. And for 23 years, this is how we've been rolling. So first of all, I want to put out there, you know, in all the provinces, anyone who is running a support group for us is a volunteer.
Yeah.
And all of our support groups are free. So for all and anyone. Okay. Yeah. In terms of the volunteers who are able to access our premises in the Johannesburg Sandton area, they can go on our website and they can download the volunteer application. Now, we take volunteers from all spectrums. We often take students who are studying psychology or studying counseling, and therefore they need to get a little bit of practical experience. So to clock up hours is great. And it puts into context this what they are learning in the textbook now becomes a real life situation when they are doing telephonic counseling. We also have individuals who have suffered and, how can I say, even succeeded on controlling and containing their depression, their anxiety, their bipolar, and feel they now wish to give back to the community. And they come forward and they volunteer.
Yeah.
We then get individuals, mature women, mature men, who just feel that, you know what, I want to give back to the community. And I have valuable life experience and I want to be able to help others. We do an intensive training program because obviously, you know, exactly like we've been speaking here today, we're dealing with life-changing calls and often life-threatening calls. So not just anybody can walk off the street, pick up a phone and say, hi. And in terms of the way we do our referral process, there's a lot of training as to how do we refer? Where do we refer? What do we refer? How do we support the people? And our retraining is quite rigorous. It's done by our board members who are psychologists and psychiatrists. We then do extensive 40 hours plus of listening in at the call center. And then they become emergency counselors. And with time, as positions open up, people then choose to become a permanent counselor. And a counselor is responsible to take on the running a 4-hour shift. And people do it for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most common one is that people genuinely care and genuinely want to help. And it's a great upliftment for our community. And again, I mean, I almost get tears in my eyes when I say, you know, that for an organization like ours to have been going for so long, with so many volunteers moving through our doors, coming and going, giving 4 hours once a week, helping people, because a lot of the time, what that person needs when they are phoning a stranger on a toll-free line Most people just need somebody to listen to them, to actually say, okay, I hear you, I care about you, and I can refer you or I can give you some ideas. We then pass the ownership back to that caller to say, okay, this you've got to now take it to the next level. And I think that is the value. It's very heartwarming to know that there are so many people who genuinely want to help.
And in terms of your branches, how far and wide are your offices?
So we have one office here in Sandton area, office which we have at the moment on our with us, okay, probably in excess of about 120 volunteers. Very, very small office administration. One or two press girls, one or two office administrators, and the rest of the office is run by and supported by our volunteers.
But are there any plans to go nationwide?
We go nationwide in that we are able to provide the telephonic counseling, even if you are sitting in a village somewhere in the Eastern Cape, but you've got access to a cell phone. And that is our footprint, as is the fact that we are able to, we continue to grow with our support groups, you know, very much. And then, of course, we have our valued assistance, which comes from the psychologist and the psychiatrist to support the organization. You know, for all of us sitting around the table here, if you had to experience depression or anxiety, you know you probably need to go and see somebody for therapy. Mm-hmm. But where do you start? Who specializes in what? That is a simple question you can phone SADAG for. You know, you don't even have to tell us the story. You could just say, I'm battling with trauma or post-traumatic stress because I've been through a hijacking. I think I need to speak to a psychologist. Mm-hmm. Who's the best person? And we can quickly tell you what area are you in and who's the specialist.
Okay, going back to what Romeo said earlier at the beginning of the show, that some of the steps that you as SADAG were taking in terms of helping prevent instead of rather than reacting, because I was thinking, I know a lot of organizations, they do like road shows. I mean, I saw the press release, you know, because now it's Christmas, the press releases that you that went out so that people can read and say, okay, this is what is happening over the period. And then obviously with that, there's a certain impact that happens. People read that and they actually get to understand, because it wasn't just about it's that time of the year, but you also had step by step ways and procedures to follow if you're feeling down and all of that. But have you had any like roadshows, for instance, outreach programs besides the actual calling in of someone saying I need help, and how did that go about? And if there is any way that you wanted to expand, what is it that you'll be looking for to help you as an organization to expand that throughout? Because now you're saying when someone has an access to a cell phone, for instance, there's someone who doesn't have access to a cell phone back in the rural areas, like extreme. There are some people who are dealing with this, and someone is looking at this problem and say, my child who is actually depressed has a demon of some sort, they need water, they need anointing oil and all of those things, but because this kind of information doesn't reach them. So is there something that you're looking into, and if so, what is it that you would require, and what is it that you as an organization would need as support to see that come to pass?
Well, we do. We do community outreach constantly. And these are the proactive steps, not only to create the awareness, but to also support and prepare for sort of high-risk times or seasonal changes, you know, that happen. So we do that. So outreach programs is always on the go, all the time. We also, February month, for example, is Worldwide Teen Suicide Prevention Month. Yeah. So we start planning already now things like school talks so that we go out and we talk to the children. Let's talk about suicide. It's a reality. You know, let's say the word, but how can you be prepared and what can you do about it? Mm-hmm. I mentioned the fact that we do corporate wellness days. Okay, that is from a corporate point of view. We get involved with communities. We often get church communities. So we are not affiliated to any religious sect, but it's a community where people have come together and for whatever shape, form or size, there's a need for them to learn or understand. We also do workshops and training with the traditional healers. Mm. One of our board members, who's a psychiatrist, he does that. So there's constant ongoing. What holds us back? Nothing holds us back because we will do it. If there's a need, if there's a request, we will do it. But as an NGO, there's always a need for funding.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges of running an NGO. We've recently, via our newsletter and our website page, we have just launched a donate button where people can go on the website, click on the donate button, and it's the press of a button.
Yeah.
And they can choose the amount. And whether it be that a person choose to donate 10 rand, and amazingly, you know, these happen. In fact, even yesterday morning, a caller phoned in and said, I actually just wanted to phone you. I can't remember the name of the counselor who helped me, but I wanted to say thank you. Mm. We've had people who have donated financially in their personal capacity, 10 rand, 50 rand. And all of this adds to the fact that we are then able to give back to the community. Funding never ending. We'll never say no. So thank you.
Yeah, that is always needed.
Yeah.
And have you had any extreme cases where someone needed counseling and after a couple of sessions you realize that they actually need more than that? Like it's someone who probably needs to be at a psychiatrist at a hospital for 6 weeks, for 2 months, like someone to be transferred to Tara, or have you had cases like that where you needed someone to actually come in or to be admitted? I mean, I know you said that you always throw the ball back into their court, but
okay, so one of the things is that we only offer telephonic counseling.
Yeah.
So our counselors are very well trained in the process of how to get a diagnosis, how to get into hospital. Again, I go back and use the example. If you, were to fall and break your leg, you know you've got to go to casualty and you know you're going to get x-rays and you might land up in hospital or you might have to go home with your leg in a crutch. But what do you do if you go to casualty and you say, well, I'm not feeling good in the head and I feel like ending my life? Okay. So we talk to the caller what to do, how to navigate the hospital, the clinic system. And we've got two extreme ends of the stick. We have people who have access to private funding and medical aid, and we have people who do not have access to it.
Yeah.
But if you do not have access to funds, it doesn't mean that you cannot get into hospital to diagnose your mental illness. And for that matter, you will land up, if your diagnosis is done and there's a need for medication, you can get your medication for free from the hospital. Mm. So we navigate, we talk to people, we tell them how to use the system.
Yeah.
So in terms of the call, we do all and everything we can to ask the right questions, to provide a solution-driven package unique to that particular individual. And then if there's a need for them to phone us back and say, this didn't work, or this I need extra help with, or whatever, we're there to follow it up. We are there to make sure that at the end of the day, they feel that they are getting well. That's the biggest thing, is they need to feel, you know what, I'm a little bit better. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I've got access to medication. I've got access to therapy.
I think also, you know, listening to what you've been saying today, we kind of like are saying to the listener that it's not a shame or embarrassing to admit when you are going through depression, and there's sufficient help for you to reach out and, you know, get help as it is. And I think one thing that really stands out is, I mean, I'm listening to you, it's like, I feel like I can trust you if I'm going through depression. And I can feel the passion that you have, you know, in assisting and making a difference in people's lives. So essentially, I think for me, as we are now in December, what are those, you know, nuggets that you can give to people? I mean, obviously, we kind of like have touched on a number of them. It's December, you know, overspending, overworking. I think that's where your opening statement, relationships and so forth. What would be your good advice to people as, you know, we are so full in December?
Yes. I think the one thing we haven't touched on, and I'm really just going to mention it as a nugget without opening a whole nother long conversation, is be very aware of perhaps turning to substance at this time of the year. It is a time of festivities.
Okay. I'm like, what do you mean?
What do you mean? But to coin the phrase, you know, honestly truly, don't go and drown your sorrows. If you are feeling that this unhappiness, the sadness that is deep within inside you, rather talk to someone. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to talk to a friend, phone SADAG. There is a friend on the other side of the line.
Yeah.
But don't mask the problem or bury the problem in alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, any of the substances. Because all that happens is that it is going to turn on and affect you at some stage. And then the poor doctors are sitting in a position with, what do they do first? Do they treat the addiction or do they treat the depression?
Mm-hmm.
What came first, the egg or the chicken? The chicken or the egg? You know, this is where they're at.
Yeah.
And that is probably the one thing that I can really highlight. Rather talk to somebody. And just say, you know what, I'm unhappy, I need help. And a friend will put up their hand and say, you know what, I know the place to phone. Phone SADAG. I'm not saying don't drink, but make sure you don't mask that and just bury the feelings.
It's one thing to celebrate and it's another to drown your sorrows.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. And obviously overspending, like Romeo said.
Yes.
And I like the fact that you'll be open on Christmas Day.
We will be open on Christmas
Day. What is that number again? Because I know someone is going
to
need it.
Okay, now, to get hold of SADAG, you can get them on 0800-567-567, 0800-567-567. And you can also check their website. They're on www.sadag.org. And you can also send them an SMS, which when they send an SMS, you call them back, right?
Yes.
And that SMS number is 31393. That SMS number again is 31393. You know, Tracy, we can sit here and talk the whole day.
There's so many subjects
that we need to touch on. But unfortunately, we are out of time. And also, by the way, if you're listening and you'd like to donate towards the organization, simply go to the website. There'll be a donate button. Press on that button as many times as you can and see how much money you can help the organization so that we can continue doing the great work of helping and alleviating this whole depression thing, because it's not just a stigma, it's a reality that we are dealing with, and it gets worse and worse by the minute. But thank you so much for joining us. And we hope that in the new year you'll come back and we'll talk about other things. Also, we'll get some of your counselors to come and tell us of their success stories and their experiences.
People must also go and volunteer as well.
Exactly. Volunteer in the new year. I start new training all over again. So we welcome so many different people, and we are really, truly grateful to the media, to you guys, I mean, to give us all this time on the show. And I think we've had fun talking about a very dismal subject.
I know. Yeah. And for all the good work that you're doing, we thank you so much to you and the organization. And you guys are truly, truly light. And that's it from us, from Belighted. Thank you, Maromza.
All right. It's all good.
Bye. Cheers.
And happy Christmas.
Thank you. And a happy Christmas to all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Bye. CliffCentral.com.